Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dix.com/scorecardplus for details.
Yes. You guys, yes, you should. This is the perfect Oreo.
Oh God, this.
She's
so happy right now.
Look at what this looks like. It's really, look at it.
Listen, stop sexualizing my experience.
I'm not sexualizing anything.
Fetishizing us.
Stop my experience.
Fetishizing
right now.
Anybody? I'm just saying this is a really.
She's like,
nice.
Don't get me in trouble.
Yeah, please, or get me in trouble. Listen. I don't care. Come on.
You guys, it's a different kind of day because Miranda's letting me start the show. Welcome, everybody, to Tea Time with Raven and Miranda. Today, we have a talent that some would call mogul, some would call visionary, some would call icon, some would call trailblazer.
Yes.
Some would call black. I call her Lena Waithe. So.
Sound like you're talking about yourself.
Really, though?
Yeah.
Listen,
come on. Come
we're
on.
Close.
Yeah.
We're close in there. I didn't win an Emmy. But
look, please, you deserve one.
Well, we're not going to go
there. You actually
not gonna go there.
Did win.
We're not going to talk about how I won an Emmy right now. Babe.
Okay. Why? Let's tell Lena.
Lena, how do you feel story? About this story?
About what story?
This story that my wife's about to tell you.
I'm already excited.
I can see that all over your face.
Yeah.
We won Emmys at the same time.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, but that's the funny part. Like, we won Emmys at the same time. Raven, Simone, and Miranda.
Separately.
No, together.
Together.
I've been in the industry, Lena, for, let me see, I'm 40 this year. I've been in the industry for probably about 37 to 38 years.
Yeah.
My wife has been in the industry for like 5.
Oh, so that's why you pissed.
Exactly. Like,
and we won Emmy at the same time.
Literally. We say that, but we didn't say it.
We didn't say it. We're gonna let you say it.
You can say it.
I can say it.
But yeah, I'm sorry.
How do you feel about being an Emmy Award winner, babe?
Oh, now it's about me? I want to know how you feel about being an Emmy Award winner.
You know.
Is it a curse?
It's a curse. Look, you know, it's interesting when you're a first black to do anything. Mm-hmm. You can never escape that. But also, I think it's so telling about the industry we're in, which is a reflection of our society. And is it a proud moment? Sure. Does it suck that only me and Quinta are the only two black women to ever win an Emmy for outstanding writing in a comedy series? It doesn't seem accurate because of the hat I'm wearing today that says A Different World. People like Yvette Lee Bowser.
Mm-hmm. Love you, Yvette.
Know, love you, Yvette, forever. Susan Fells Hill, Debbie Allen.
Love you, Debbie.
Come on. These are women who helped to guide a show that would impact me, employ you. So it just goes to show that this industry is not fair.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Which is why
so I'm happy to have an Emmy.
It's not. Yeah.
But it's very telling.
It's bittersweet.
Yeah.
Hey, babes.
Yeah.
You want to tell him or should I?
I'll tell him.
Okay, tell him. Tell him now.
Tea Time with Raven and Miranda is going to have our first live show. That's right.
Yes, our first live show is happening, you guys. Tea Time is coming to the stage on June 6th at 7 p.m.
at the Howard Theater.
The Theater.
In Washington, D.C. Hey, if you're there for World Pride, we'll be there too.
Come see us, you guys. Tickets and all that information down below.
But that brings us to my next question. You feel that bittersweet and therefore you continue to build platforms for people to thrive.
Yes.
And I'm bringing up your newest out here in these streets, Shy. Congratulations on the
new season.
Now, I want to
I was at the party. You weren't.
I was on
I've
a plane.
I've already seen the episode, guys.
All good. It's all good.
I know.
You had to work. Thank you for being there.
And
my pleasure. It was fun.
Was, you know, my mom is in that show.
Your mom is in it?
Yeah.
Her mom.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes.
Lynn Whitfield.
She's like,
your mom is in my show? Hold up.
I got a lot of mamas.
Look,
Lynn Whitfield is in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But my real question, she's amazing. My real question is, as creator, head honcho, what's that crafty looking like?
What's that crafty? Look, crafty is really important. to the energy, you know, and we have great crafty, you know, whenever I pull up on set, it's always great. It's always good energy. Mm-hmm. The person mm-hmm. who's also in charge of the crafty, mm-hmm. you know what yeah. I mean? It's good. And also it's Chicago. Mm-hmm. So people are very particular about the food. You know, we do like a Flamin' Hot. Okay.
Ooh, that's cute.
But, you know, we also try to have the healthy, you know, treats as well.
Because we're all on camera, so you got to watch our weight.
We're trying to just be thoughtful.
That's kind.
For everybody.
For those who don't know, Crafty is the area on a set.
Everyone knows, because you talk about Crafty all the time. You guys all know it. Like, literally, you talk about Crafty all the time.
Everybody may not know what Crafty is.
No, but we've talked about it on this podcast so many times. Okay, where Raven then has to interrupt and say,
do you know what Crafty is?
And I'm like, by this
Crafty,
time.
Where the snacks at? Okay? And what kind of snacks?
What kind of snacks you got?
Are they good snacks? You the person when you come to set, how's Crafty? What's up? What's going
on? I only need to know two things. Look. My trailer and where Crafty.
Well, also because you got it here as a youngin', okay, yeah. young icon. You're like, where the candy at?
Listen.
Where the M&M's at?
And Anthony Mackie are the two people that I have met that are the most Crafty obsessed people. Like, Anthony Mackie, you can't find him on a goddamn set. And it's because the man is always
like
at Crafty.
I like to snack, too. I like to snack because you're bored.
So
you're waiting.
You're always at Crafty,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, and it's also where everybody hanging out, and you just, you know, you're like in between.
I found one of my girlfriends at Crafty.
I'm sorry, what?
Huh? Oh, okay. So my next question is...
I like these questions.
Okay, what are you going through with all these
questions?
Listen,
you're over here laughing, being a part of it. I'm over here asking hard-hitting questions.
Hilarious.
It's cool.
Okay, hard-hitting.
Hard-hitting. Okay, give it to her.
You're in Chicago, shooting The Chi. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of security or
hard hitting?
No.
So it's say does the community come around and show love for you?
They do. You know, I think being from Chicago and when I go back, I think there's just such a lovely energy. And not just me with the cast. They care more about the cast than me at this point. Like Jacob Lattimore is like, I'm Emmett. That's it. Like, that's my name. That's the thing. And I think it's so interesting to create a character that an actor is so associated with. Mm-hmm. It's a very unique bond. And what's cool is like, and even like we have a young, you know, kids, you know, Shaman, who I see online, people call him Papa. And at one point he was like, well, I'm Shaman. I see him in the comments. He probably don't know I saw that. And but I think that's because of your identity. Yeah. You know, you're so, you know, obviously I knew them when they're little tykes. And so they are now are like, 18, 19, and they're going through that thing of, well, I'm myself, not my character.
Yeah.
And it's tricky because they only know you as that. And so, and I've crossed into acting as well, where Denise on Master of None is a little bit like Mary Tyler Moore versus Mary Richards, where it's not that much different. But what's cool, because I have a career outside of Master of None, people don't say Denise to me. Mm-hmm. They say Lena. Mm-hmm. And so I think that does help me to kind of separate myself from the characters I've played versus who I am. And I think for you it's probably difficult because like we knew you as a young person. And we're like, oh, this is Olivia. And it's so interesting because I was thinking about that transition of having to, we were talking today in the writer's room about adding new kids to the show because you need that energy. That's a part of our show.
Energy,
When you think about The Cosby Show, Rudy gave us that youthful energy. And as she got older, the show's still going. So then introduce Olivia because you need that energy. And I love that episode where it's like, it's almost a passing of the torch where the little duck, the toy, she's like, that's my toy. That's mine. And they're like, well, you don't even play with it no more. Like, if she want to play with it, she can. And by the end of the episode, obviously, Rudy's like, okay, Olivia, you can have it.
Oh, that was my scene?
It was literally the passing of a torch of,
you're
the young person now. Mm-hmm. You bring that energy to the show.
There is something also awesome about someone being really close to their character. It brings a success to the show that's different. Everybody loves Raymond, Seinfeld, Cosby Show, Jamie Foxx Show. You are creating a lexicon for the audience to know who you are, and it brings success. I mean, it's scary for the actor because it does put you in a box and whatever and whatnot, but at the same time, it's major to do that.
For
it's
sure.
Rarely do you find thespians that can jump from character to character and mold and, you know, twist themselves into it.
It also really deepens, though, that parasocial relationship where you're talking about, you know, kids who are like, no, I'm not just that actor or that character. I am my own person. Because for you, I know for sure, Raven Baxter, Raven Simmons.
Yeah, everybody wants me to tell their future. And I'm like, we all gonna die one day.
But it's also interesting because you speak to different generations.
Yeah.
You know, because for me, you know, we same age, I came up with you. And then there are younger people behind me that are like, I don't really, I'm a That's So Raven, motherfucker. I don't do Olivia. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, you already got like a different, you know, and like some of us take longer, like, well, would you know about hanging with Mr. Cooper, though? You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like,
babe, we should have said hang with Mr. Cooper.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says that.
Lena, you're a real one for that.
Hello.
Thank you.
Yeah. DeBrat's music video. I'm not.
Oh,
sleep.
Wow.
Like, come
you
on.
Know.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm
wait.
Dead.
So,
you can stay.
I want to know, you're a little girl growing up. Are you just always in love with film, TV, music? Are you just consuming and eating all this stuff up?
Yeah. You know, I think as a young person, I was always watching TV, but I think being in the 90s, it was like we had black stuff, we had shows, and also like you were such an important image for me being my age and seeing you, and I think it sort of said, oh, okay, we can do that, we can rap, we can act, we can be cute, we can be funny, we can have opinions. And so I think that's why I think it's such an important thing for you, not just to see yourself, but to see hope, to see what could be.
Yeah.
And I think I was so taken with it. I didn't think, you know, as a young person, I wanted to write television. I think I was like, oh, is that a career? Is that a thing you can do? But I just knew how much it brought my family together. And how much it was regimented. I mean, it was every Thursday, every Friday, this particular thing at a time. We had a TiVo. We didn't have the.
Right.
So it was communal. Mm-hmm. And I think I really, really, because I'm a big person about community. Mm-hmm. And so what I love is that Shy is a weekly show.
Yeah.
You cannot binge it all at once. You have to come back every weekend to see it. And I think that's what I love. Because that's what I loved about watching you on TV. I had to wait every week.
Yeah. With content like that, we were having this conversation a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And to kind of reiterate what you said, but then bring it somewhere else, is that when we were growing up, everyone had to sit in front of the television at the same time.
Yeah.
Now everybody has their own algorithm. So I don't know who is what and why is where.
Same.
And so therefore, there's no real through line connectivity with conversation.
Right.
And when you have something that everyone is just focused on at one time, that's why we're raised the way we are, from Rugrats all the way to Different World to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, you're 5 or 6 years old. You already knew that you were within the community. And y'all know what I mean by community.
Queer.
Yeah. The little bitch of Tukwa.
You really knew that young?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because, and I'm curious what it is for you, Raven, like, you when you're kids, you're already being taught a binary. So I was telling somebody the other day, it's like little girls are raised to want to be mothers, and that, remember the baby doll where you changed the diaper
when
and
it was pee on you?
Yeah,
I used to have one of them.
Yeah, you know, it's like, and that is sort of trying to speak to my maternal instincts already as a young girl, and me wanting to go play outside, which I wanted to do a lot, definitely very much a tomboy, even that, like, remember, like, you know, Troy the boy in Crooklyn, are you a tomboy?
Mm-hmm.
And so those things I was associated with, but the difference is with, I think, young girls, it's okay for us to be to roughhouse more than it is for a little boy to play double dutch.
Most definitely.
So we don't, I didn't really get, I just, they, I think my family thought, oh, this is a phase she's going through. Eventually she'll kind of get to dresses. But then when I got into high school, I was still tomboyish. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of like, well, maybe when she gets to college. So I never even really, you know, I was just like, oh, this is just how I am. It's how I dress.
Which brings me to my question. Wife pleaser or hoodie?
Oh, see, I got both happening today.
Let's go.
There's a wife pleaser and a hoodie happening. I am double gay today.
Double gay.
I knew where I was coming.
Gay.
Okay.
This
will transfer into a pitch. I'm walking into Disney today.
I love that.
And it's not a big whoop because they're like, hello, Lita Wade. This is just
double
a part
gay
of what the brand is. I know my mom would be like, you know, if we were talking like that, she'd be like, this is embarrassing. Why are you not wearing a suit? What's happening?
My mama used to call
hilarious
me before.
And now her mama calls me.
I know, but literally, if I didn't put on mascara and lip gloss.
What?
And wear some type of tight pants to a meeting, I would get cussed out from top to bottom. If she only knew the shit that I wear to set.
She would lose her mind. And then when we started doing this, she called me and she was like, you need to wear more lipstick. You need to. And I was like, oh my God, I hate doing makeup.
Watch it and having thoughts and opinions.
The
thoughts and opinions.
What is a family affair?
Hold on though. I want to ask you both a question.
Okay.
Have you guys heard, it's kind of like blown up on TikTok right now.
Okay.
Of a stay-at-home stud.
I'd like to be one. I don't know.
Right.
What's happening?
Would you? Do you know what this is? I mean, it's exactly what it
sounds like.
I'm
not on TikTok. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Please explain, lady.
A stay-at-home stud is when a stud stays at home. And really? They do the cooking, the cleaning, and then you have a femme presenting.
Yeah, presenting.
Go out in that world and bring home the bacon. It's like a whole thing. There's like stay-at-home, there's
dads?
A movement.
So stay-at-home dad.
Well, there's daddy. Not, there don't have to be, oh yeah, daddy, sure. Not yeah. dad, but daddy.
So, okay.
You know, it's so interesting because I think, you know, someone said to me, which I believe this to be true, every couples are like snowflakes. And the truth is that sometimes, because even with heteronormativity, like the binary, it seems odd for someone who is femme to be the breadwinner
right.
for
right.
some reason.
Right.
Like, that's why I'm like, I don't, if it's blowing up, it's because, exactly. oh, that's weird. Like, normally, if you're the stud and you're the masculine one in the relationship, you're the one bringing home the money.
Exactly.
And so it's almost sort of like this, it's sort of deemed, oh, how interesting that they're staying home and taking care of the house. But it's like, but what if, just because you may be the more masculine one, what if you actually like to keep a home? Or what if your partner makes more money and you're really trying to build? And so,
yeah.
you know, again, we it's so interesting how the queer community is like this idea of who are we without straightness?
Mm-hmm.
yeah. Like, how do we define ourselves
yeah.
outside of that?
Yeah.
Sometimes you know we I mean? Can't, though. Sometimes we can't because we're too busy trying to fight our own demons and can't really tackle it until we've moved past and then we're too old to actually make moves when the younger generation coming up trying to change dynamics for themselves. It's like we got a lot of healing to do before we can actually tackle that problem.
Well, particularly, yeah. I think our age group, not trying to call us old, like, you know,
I'm
40.
Old. I'm
okay,
40.
Look,
I'm about to be 40.
Come on, look, I'm 40. 40 is a cool age. May 17th is coming. I'm about to be 41. Yeah.
41.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Come on, Taurus gang. You know, you know, but I think because we were such a part of a unique generation, I think, like not growing up with social media.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
growing up with like,
we were lucky.
Like we got DVR when we were like in college.
That
like,
part.
So it, and so we didn't really know a ton about each other. You had to wait for a magazine interview to come out to kind of understand someone. And so now I think there's so much familiarity.
Yeah.
That people sort of think they have a right to have an opinion or, mm-hmm. or maybe a entitlement to space in your life
yep.
and things like that. People have so much access to us
yeah,
now
yeah.
and so I think it also in terms of gender and binary and race and queerness, like we were still tomboys when we were kids. Now if we were kids now, the parents were like, I think she's gonna be a lesbian, like that's
period.
Just they would say it and it wouldn't be weird. And so this new generation that's coming up behind us, even though we kind of like, you know, kind of young aunts kind of look at these young kids being like, oh, we poly.
Yeah, because y'all look older than us, you
yeah.
know, we still are, we're 40, y'all look crazy.
Look, but they talking about being poly, they're talking about yeah. like non-binary, like that wasn't even a thing to us. You know, and so
exactly.
now what I hope is this new generation, they really have to do away with, I think, gender roles, the idea of heterosexuality, and even the idea of that, like, I think, you know, Baldwin, I read his stuff all the time. He's talking about whiteness is a state of mind,
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
not a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of thinking.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to move into that space. Look, we live in a capitalist society, a patriarchal society, a white-leaning society. And that's because it has always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think with each generation, we hope to move away from it. But, you know, if majority rules, like you look at this country we're living in now, it's proof that people kind of like the way things have always been.
100%. And they're afraid of change. It's too
yeah.
hard to fight against the machine. It's too
yeah.
hard sometimes.
Because even if you think about how people think in their lives, like, Baldwin said something about being in a relationship, even though he was talking about society. To be in a relationship is to modify.
Mm.
That's what
100%.
I did. When I heard it, I was like, oh, because he was talking about race relations.
Mm.
He's like, we have to, obviously at the time, in the 60s, like, we have to figure out a way to change both sides
mm-hmm.
so we can come together.
Yeah.
That's what a relationship is.
Period.
You can't just, like, I'm not going to change. And so change is hard.
Yeah.
Growing is hard.
Yeah.
Looking
and
in the mirror is hard.
Yeah.
It's the most difficult. Why do you think everybody on social looking at everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I take a social media break because I was like, hold up, I'm not focusing enough on myself.
Mm-hmm. Everything else is a distraction.
It is such
yeah.
a distraction.
Yeah.
Work is a distraction for me. I kind of had that feeling. I was not paying attention to myself up until 2020 when I was employed but didn't have to go to work. So my brain was like, okay, you don't have to hustle, but you get to stay at home. That's when things started to shift for me, without a doubt.
I remember that.
And I was just like, oh, this is different. I can live in this space. I can live in my world. And then it's a downfall from there. It was an uphill from there.
That's when we got married.
That's when we got, and yeah. I say downfall because the downfall was all my masks started to come off.
And I remember people reacted to that in such an interesting way. Mm-hmm. But I think what was so interesting was that you were reintroducing yourself to us. Because when we met you, you were a child.
And I was dressed the same way. If somebody could remember the first album, I was literally dressed the same way.
I had the poster. Way. Come on. With the hat and the baggy pants.
Yes.
The J-Cos are back.
But that was the cross cut. You know, it's like, but I remember even seeing you and going like, oh, we both tomboys. Cool. No big deal. Yeah. You know, and so in essence, we were seeing each other before we even met each other.
Yes.
And I think, and that's the thing is parents, sometimes they're not attuned to their children.
100%.
It's more about who do I want my child to be versus who is my child actually.
And don't let your child be famous. Another conversation.
That is so major. I talk about that a lot because I feel like parents don't realize, not all parents, and obviously I'm not a parent, so I'm, you know. But I think that people don't understand that when you bring a life into the world, that spirit has its own path and it has its own purpose. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the responsibility of a parent is to guide, support, and help that being find its way in terms of what its calling is.
Whenever someone says to me they want to have a baby or they want to be a parent, I think my first question is why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
it's a narcissistic act.
True. I know we're all grateful that maybe our parents, you know, did what they did and here we are.
Narcissistic enough to do it.
But, you know, and I have super complicated relationships with my parents. I think, well, maybe people kind of can't see that in the work. I don't know. It always comes out. Hello. Angela Bassett got nominated for an Emmy in that Master of None episode for playing my mom beautifully, a version of it. But I think what was so interesting, and I'll use the art. In Master of None, when the coming out scene happens, I wrote it in the action line. The action line is what you don't see. It's which I have to describe for the actor, for the director. But in the action line, when we're sitting there, when I tell her I'm gay, I write that Catherine looks around to see if anybody else heard.
Oh, I know.
And Angela Bassett, being Angela Bassett, does just that. And it's almost as if I'm not even acting anymore.
Wow.
Because what I wanted to get across to Aziz and Alan when talking to them about this what would ultimately become the episode was that my family cannot quote the Bible to save their lives. We were lazy Christians. But it was really more about what will the neighbors think?
Appearances.
And that's a different kind of religion.
Yeah.
And that is one that in some Black households, it's about keeping up with the Joneses. It's about what do people say? And when you are a queer person, you have to have such a detachment from what society says about you because you are going against what society tells you to be.
You know where that comes from for Black people, though?
White supremacy.
It comes from slavery.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a leftover from slavery.
And
we haven't cleaned it up
yet. We have not. We still carry that. Mm. And so, because again, you know, we define ourselves as Black, as queer, as woman. That is how I identify. I identify with the gender I was assigned at birth. I identify as a woman. And the thing is, a lot of people look at me and go, they want to ask my pronouns because they want to know. But I think because of how I appear, they assume that it's they, them.
Yeah.
They assume that it might be something other than she, her. And I'm saying like, you know, again, that's an assumption you're making because of how I appear, because it's how I feel comfortable. But I still identify as a woman. There may be someone else who dressed this way, but say I identify as they, them.
Mm-hmm.
Both are valid. But the thing is, when we use these terms to identify ourselves, the question becomes, well, how do you define Black?
Mm. Pew, 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 pew.
How do you define queer? How do you define woman?
Pew, pew.
Because we all have different definitions of what is it to be a good Black person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think oftentimes in our society, what it means to be a good Black person is to be with another Black person.
Pew, 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 pew.
And so the question becomes, why does that make you a better Black person? What about that is more good?
Mm.
Are you remaining loyal to the community by doing that?
That's exactly what that is.
Or are you asking me not to be true to myself, but rather true to a group of people based on how we look?
Don't leave.
Wow.
Don't leave the group. Because the less numbers we have, the more we are flailing. When in actuality, when you leave this toxic group, you become a part of the world and you become a part of the world
toxic
community.
Mentality, because it's not a toxic group.
It's a toxic mentality. Say, yeah. Sorry. When you leave that toxic mentality, you're integrating yourself into the world. And that's a better for me. Like, I love the fact that we are on a planet with so many different types of thought processes, mm-hmm. so many different types of cultures. Yeah. We can learn from every single culture, from every single religion. And if you are just stuck in one group all the time, you're never going to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think I've gotten in trouble a lot with things that I've said, but that is ultimately what my brain wants to do. I want to travel to every single country and say, oh, you cook chicken better than me. I'm going to eat your chicken too. You know what I mean? Y'all know who it is. Y'all know who cooks that bomb-ass fried chicken. It's not just black people. This shit is delicious. But it's all over. You know what I mean? And I do want to go to Africa and see the beautiful women with the red clay on their skin. I want to go to India and see the beautiful women with the yellow clay on their skin. There's so many ways and people to learn from. And if you just stay in that circle and condemn your people from leaving and venturing it out, that's toxic.
You miss a lot in that space, though. Because if you are just narrow and in your box, you miss experiencing and growth. Life, and there's so much out there. And I think it's a shame, though, because I think a lot of it stems from fear and judgment. And what I talk about is I think that most people are just, whenever they are condemning someone else or spewing hate about someone else, it's because they're scaring you. You're either scared of the power, you're scared of the excellence, you're scared of the beauty, you're scared of the freedom, and then it's triggering something in you that's causing you to lash out and hate and want to try and control a situation or control a group. And that is, that makes me sad for that person.
It does.
Ultimately, or those groups of people. But it's unfortunate when those groups of people are somehow elevated into more power or more, you know, privilege or opportunity than another group.
We're very privileged in opportunity. We're very privileged, not only because of where we are in our life, but because of our free thinking and because you can stick your hand in that pot and pick a topic.
Oh, yes, it's time. I was nervous about this pot, y'all. What's in here?
Usually I'm the queen of transitioning us into the pot, but we're really shaking things up today.
I'm sweating.
What are we talking about today on Tea Time, Lena?
We're talking about iconic women.
Ooh.
People that identify as women, rather.
Yes.
Oh, I'll take that.
There you go.
Iconic. Sometimes I think a lot of people throw the word iconic around.
This is why I do Legacy Talk, just so I can kind of help everybody understand.
It's a lot. Let's talk about what the difference between an iconic woman is. What makes an iconic woman?
Well,
because there's a difference between a famous woman.
Everybody has a different definition.
Each generation does.
Yeah, they do.
Christ.
They do.
Okay, let's do our generation. What does iconic mean to you?
Oh, man. Iconic. I think iconic for me is, and we're particularly talking about women, or people that consistently are a part of things that help shift the culture forward in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you and I can both agree. We all can agree that Debbie Allen is an iconic woman.
1,000%.
And I think a lot of that has to do, when I did sit down with her for a conversation, when I'm just going through, whether it be, you know, Sweet Charity to, you know, obviously her work on A Different World, Amistad. Yeah. And
the work that she does in the community now with her dance.
Yes, Dada, you know what I mean? And there's just so many things that she's been a part of that have fame, obviously, that have really shifted things for us as a society.
Big
through
time.
Her art, mm-hmm. through her dance, through her acting, through all of her many abilities as a director.
But you're also listing years of things,
decades.
Right? Decades. Yeah. And I'm going to add on to that. And for me, I'm just going to skip. Didn't mean to skip you, honey.
You didn't skip me. I'm coming around the back.
I was going to bring up Diana Ross. I'm coming out.
Yes.
But for me, iconic women, iconic people, someone that not only shifts culture, but does it over a course of time. Mm-hmm. Not just one or two things. I need you to do it for at least 10 years plus, personally, in a way that is not self-serving and also, masterful in a way, in a sense. And I feel, and I'm just going to go back because I'm this person at the table. Not everybody that has a hit album is iconic.
No.
Not everybody that got 15 million views on one post is iconic. Okay. You got to be out here in these streets for multiple years doing multiple things to be iconic. I'm sorry.
But what you're talking about, I think, is famous. And
No. I'm talking about famous. Them people out there. She's iconic. She just was born.
No, but I'm saying you're talking about fame. You're talking about fame. And I think fame is something that is temporary. Or it can be temporary, but it's also based on visibility. So that's where you become famous. Because now we've seen anyone can become famous. You can go on TikTok and just spew. And then all of a sudden you're on the new, you're famous.
But people would call that iconic now.
No, I think.
Yes, they do.
I mean, yes. And I'm saying that I think I'm agreeing with you.
Thank you.
I'm agreeing with you.
The way she agrees is saying no. It's marriage, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I agree that being iconic or should have real weight in it.
Yes.
And it's something that I think becomes larger than the person themselves.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, you know, it's like Debbie Allen, she represents so much more than just her own personal, you know,
self.
Beyonce. Beyonce is iconic.
She's iconic.
But Beyonce started as famous and she transitioned into being an icon based off of her.
Period. But that's exactly what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Michael Jackson started as famous and he turned into an icon because of the years that he had pushing things forward. Diana Ross.
They culturally do for the culture, the impact that has made.
And I'm not just going to list black people.
Representation. No.
Betty, not Betty White. She's iconic. But
Betty Davis.
Marilyn Monroe.
Betty.
Bette Midler.
Oh, yeah.
To me, firsts. Women that trailblaze and people like that, that's iconic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I'm reading this book, Let Them Theory, although I'm not alone
Mel
in that.
Mel Robbins?
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the table,
else.
Lena.
Exactly. Everybody's reading it. But I think even in that, because say if a young kid wants to call a new pop star an icon, right? Mm-hmm. We can let them do that. Say like, all right, go for it.
Yeah.
I think what you can't argue with is time. So if, say, in 10 years, if that person that this 12-year-old that we may not deem as iconic, but they do, if in 10 years if that person is still doing stuff...
Then they can get that title.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But but then that person gets to say, I called it. You know what I mean?
Get out of here.
You know what I mean? Oh, but if they don't, if that person 10 years like not, you know, who knows what, then they may say, okay, I may have given that to that too early. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's interesting because for us, like, we were thinking of you as like an icon when you were young and you maintained, you stuck,
I've been here for 30 years. There's a difference.
But sometimes, when you were young,
you hadn't been.
No, but they weren't calling me an icon when I was young.
No, I mean, but the thing is that here's the tricky part. It's time will tell.
Time will always tell.
But the truth is, we get to look back. Like, we remember when the first Destiny's Child album came out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we could feel like, oh, something's going on here. Something's up. Now, we couldn't foresee all that, but we were wondering, is Beyonce going to go solo one day?
Yeah, we didn't know Lemonade was in the works.
Does that going to happen? And then it does.
Yeah.
So we got a chance to witness that. And even, like, I was thinking of that. I remember when Brandy's, like, I Want to Be Down music video came on.
Remember that?
I remember it.
Remember that?
And I think there's a part of us that could feel something new was happening. We didn't know where it was going to go or what was going to happen, but we were like, something's happening here and we can feel it.
That
and so,
X Factor is difficult not
so
to feel.
Tricky.
But I'm going to be a little bit of an asshole. Like,
for it.
Is Montel Jordan an icon?
He has an iconic song.
There you go. See, that's the thing. It's like something happened there, but it's not him. It was the piece of music, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what sometimes people are confusing. A piece of work can be iconic. Like Precious was an iconic piece of work, but I wouldn't give Gabby that icon status.
But people
and
are
I feel
also,
like sometimes people misinterpret.
People are also
saying.
Taking things individually.
Love you, Gabby.
Because you could say, like, my mom is iconic to me. And she could, on a personal...
Teresa is iconic.
But there you go. But, like, on a personal level, you know what I mean? That could be true to me. But when you're talking about, like, globally, undeniably iconic, then yes. And then people also have what is now, like, iconic moments. Like, people will do something where you're like, oh my God, that moment.
J-Lo with the dress is an iconic moment.
There
because
you go.
It burns in your skull and it lasts throughout history. It's, again, it's that time
it's
factor.
Time.
It's also it's all the debatable because every year it happens with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. People are nominated and you know, you see your person be nominated and you're like, well, they better get in this year, you know, and then sometimes they don't. I know a lot of our generation is really excited about Outkast, obviously.
I mean, yes.
Yes, because for us, we're like, yes,
yes,
please put our people in there now as well. And but there has to be a vote, and there has to be so many things, and there's so much politics that go into that. And but because they are going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it puts them into this space. Like Suzanne DePass is one of the very few executives to be put in.
We love you, Rock Suzanne.
Just had lunch with her. She's amazing. She's very iconic. I did. I saw her at the Vanity Fair Oscar party. I went over and said, I'm not worthy. And
we got together.
I was just like, can we please sit?
She's masterful.
She's an icon. And she's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as one of the very few executives to be in that. And it's so interesting because I asked some of the younger people around me. I said, do y'all know who Suzanne DePass is? And they said, I don't. And then when I said, well, she discovered Michael Jackson, and they said, oh. And what I wrote down in my note was how instrumental someone can be and then slowly become invisible.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it is important. And I want Suzanne DePass to come on my podcast and we sit down and do a legacy talk, because I think that is also a part of what I want my legacy to be, is to educate people about folks that to them are invisible, but you have no idea how they've impacted your life.
Yeah. But I think so that's great. I'm sorry.
Pregnant pause.
Oh, yeah.
Not even that. Just
that was my
breath.
I'm sorry. But I was going to give her kudos. I was going to say, I think that's why I even can say icon to you, because throughout your career, everything you touch is iconic as you move forward with the things that you do. You shift for the culture. You choose things that make massive impact. And I'm a huge fucking fan of Ready Player One. There's only three books that I've ever read in my life, top to bottom.
Come on.
The Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
Ready Player One.
And the Bible.
Fuck that. No, hell no, I didn't.
I'm still working through the Bible. We all are.
I know.
Which Testament?
It's the Celestine Prophecy.
Come on.
And Ready Player One, Whoopi turned me on to.
Wow.
And when I tell you, when you look through your work outside of, you know, the one-offs here and there, like the stuff that you are integral in, and that's the right word, right?
Integral.
Yeah, integral. Yeah.
Yes.
Degree.
Yes.
Things that you are weaved into, you do have that it factor, and it makes it things and milestones in our culture where we can be like, she was there, she was there, she was there. The iconic route that you're taking is undeniable. Do you know what I mean?
Thank you. I see that.
I think it's because I'm just sitting with you now. I don't know you well, obviously, but I think the feeling I'm getting is you're intentional. There's thought behind the things that you're doing. You have greater purpose and meaning. It's not just some kind of like goal of, oh, I want to be famous or monetarily, you know, have all
of this.
I'm
sure that's part of it too.
I mean, sure. It's nice to.
Like bags.
I know.
Sorry.
She's like, look, get your money. Okay?
Always.
Get your check.
That's Raven's motivation all the time. Are they paying me? Is there a check?
I'm coming.
We live in a capitalist society.
Or no wig. Listen.
I hate her.
No wig?
That's crazy. Wig or no wig.
Come on. What you need. What you need.
Oh,
okay. The narrative of a child star.
Exactly.
You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Speaking of characters, though, child stars are often characters. You are, baby. What do you think it takes to create or shape an iconic character, like in writing and storytelling?
Oof. I mean, the truth is, you never know.
This is true.
You don't know. I think when you're writing characters, because a big thing with Queen and Slim was I didn't want to tell you their names. Because there was an element of wanting people to see themselves and also to do a thing for myself as a writer. I said, how long can I go without them having to say their names? Mm-hmm. And some people didn't even notice it. They didn't even realize. They just know, oh, it's Queen of Slim. I'm going to see this thing. It's like, yeah, because the mission is for you to see yourselves in these characters.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that image, these two amazing actors became iconic in a way. And I even knew, I said, the image that they take has to feel iconic. And that was scary to say that, because then we had to go find a photographer. The outfits had to be a certain way. They had to pose a certain way. And also we knew it would be the mural of them at the end. You know, this is because and it was about documenting, even in the, you know, when Slim says, you know, I don't have many pictures of myself, you know, and Queen is like, well, that's how there's proof that we were here. And obviously he does want to take a photo of them in this moment of in time. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they don't know it yet, but they won't live much longer. And that is how they'll always be remembered, mm-hmm. is in that moment. So I think, to me, you know, I can only hope people kind of get what I'm going for. And the fact that folks really did get upset about those characters losing their lives at the end of the film, I think there was an element of, because of how I show up in the world, a desire to say, oh, that was done in a vicious way. Mm-hmm. Because I think people are used to only men, people who identify as male or masculine, for their work to be confronting and maybe want me as a woman to comfort. Mm-hmm. But in my work, I'm here to confront.
As you should.
Yeah. That's what I do, you know? Should. And so, and I think that, in a way, that conversation, you know, Beyonce told us, like, you know, you're the one when you cause a lot of conversation. And if you're not, exactly. You know, then I don't know if you're really doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Is there a specific moment when you realized that you were becoming like a cultural reference point for people?
I think when she wasn't vice president yet, but Vice President Kamala Harris wore
you remember her?
A T-shirt of me. No, I don't. Look,
you're so crazy.
I'll never forget.
I'll never forget her. She's iconic.
Yeah.
And again, time will tell. But I think we will look back on this time in 20 years and have a very interesting conversation.
Yes, we will.
We'll see what that'll be. Hopefully, God willing, we're still here to have it. But when she wore me, well, not like an image of someone did a drawing of me on the Met Gala carpet with the rainbow cape.
Yeah.
And that image was going around and she wore on a T-shirt.
Yes,
And someone sent that to me and I thought, wow, because the moment at the Met was already such an amazing moment, not knowing that people would take that on and what that would mean. But I knew I wanted to show up as myself and I knew I wanted to honor all of my community when I walked
when
into that
carpet. When you get invited to the Met again, can we be the people to hold your cape?
Look, I'm still look, trying I'll to get hold, back on the
can
list.
We
I don't
employees?
Know
can we be employees?
Can we be employees of yours?
Because
we're trying to get to the cape.
It's oh my God, hilarious.
I'm trying to get there.
I know, you're hilarious. One day, babe.
That's also some, like, who knows those politics? I don't know.
Listen, I'm too old. I don't know what happened.
Look, we old. Please, it's somebody in their 60s. Like, y'all is young.
Honey, sure. The way we work.
Yo, okay. But that, we look good, though.
You guys, your skin's amazing.
Thank you.
Both of you.
Oh, come
thank
on.
You, babes.
It's
you
the
know
melanin.
What? Yours,
I
too.
Know.
Yeah,
I'm
you
so
looking
jealous.
Great. You glowing.
Listen, she puts on, she puts on so many red lights. Lena, thank you so much.
Thank you
You're
all.
Iconic.
You're iconic.
Let's
thank
toast.
Like the official.
Oh, look, come on. You are an icon as well.
You too.
Come on,
babes,
don't play
you're
me.
An icon
whatever.
Too.
Whatever.
She's like, I'm
your
sitting
icon.
Between two icons.
I am
between two ferns, between two cream.
Yes, just cream.
My Oreo cookie.
Yes.
Today we are toasting to the Hillman Grad Foundation.
What up, Hillman Grad Foundation?
A foundation co-created by none other than
Miss
Lena,
here.
Whose yes. mission is to empower underrepresented artists and amplify the stories of diverse, historically marginalized communities across all industries.
All the industries.
Their mentorship lab provides opportunities for creatives to develop their skills and build connections in the entertainment industry.
I love
it's
it.
Amazing.
Thank you.
We're
thank
toasting
you.
To you. When did you start this?
Oh, man. We're in our fourth year this time around. So it's been, you know, about 5 years in total, just wanting to give people opportunities that, because there's a lot of writing programs when I came into the industry, and some of them have kind of disappeared. Some of them for some folks weren't as fulfilling. And I think what I wanted to do was to create a program where people could actually build community, because that's the most thing that's going to keep you, really, the community mm-hmm. around you, not always the industry, but also kind of give folks etiquette, because every time people don't always know that this is such a specific workplace that we are at, you know, you're spending hours and hours with people in a very sort of a social environment, and you're creating art, and there's pressure, and there's a lot going on.
Ooh,
and so I think, you know, we have like an actor lab, television writers, and then execs. And so what we try to do is give them all the information we can, all the wisdom, all the good energy, all the support, so that way when they get into the industry, they don't kind of flail and don't know what to do when they get
smart.
A job. And so
good
and we also keep in touch, and I'll meet with them once a month and all the kinds. I just met with them recently, and you know, it's I never want to be a bucket of cold water, but we always want to be super honest, especially where we are in our industry right now.
Yeah.
A lot of them are kind of like, what are we going to do? And I said, you're going to pour into your craft, you're going to pour into each other, and you're going to control what you can and not worry about what you can't.
Pew 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 pew.
You know what that is? Iconic.
Okay.
Yes, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. Please check out this podcast wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget to comment, like, share all the way down. Lena, just tell them all your socials real fast. Anything else you want to plug?
Only
real
on
quick?
Instagram.
Okay.
That's it.
Peach and... emoji. Peach emoji.
New season of The Shy is coming out.
The Shy is coming out May 16th.
Yep.
And Legacy Talk with Lena Waithe is on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's a good podcast.
Period. Period. All right, everybody.
Thanks,
thanks for watching.
Bye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.